Well, if you're picking up with us just this week and you missed last week, I tried to set up the idea last week that we're all fighting for something, and instead of fighting against some of the stuff that often happens in life, what would it look like for us to fight for resilience? Resilience is a powerful, powerful thing. It's like a muscle. The more you work out your resilience, the better you will be the next time some kind of change comes. Today, I want to talk about a specific aspect, a specific situation that has happened to all of us, that will happen to all of us, but we're not alone. When authors wrote about Jesus' life, they actually used this word in a really interesting way to me. In fact, it was used before he came onto the scene. He actually used the word himself in talking about his own life and what was going to happen. And then when people look back on his life, they use this word. The first reference that I want to show you is in Isaiah 53. This was written by a prophet years before Jesus ever came to earth. Isaiah wrote, "He was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering and familiar with pain." He was speaking in a prophetic sense that he would be despised and rejected by mankind. And then when Jesus actually spoke, when he was talking to his closest followers about what the days leading up to the end of his life were going to be like, this is what he shared. This is found in Mark 8, verse 31. "He then began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and would be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law." He went on to say, and that he must be killed and after 3 days would rise again. But there he is. It was prophesied about him. Isaiah said, yeah, he would be one that would be rejected by mankind, but then Jesus himself, as he was talking to his closest followers, he said, look, this is essential that I go through this. It is essential that I experience this rejection from the people who seem in that day to have mattered most. And then Peter, one of his closest friends, one of his closest associates, closest followers, in the letter that he wrote to people around the area in that day, this is what Peter said, 1 Peter 2, verse 4. "He is the living stone, and he's rejected by human hands." Jesus, being the living stone, he was rejected, as Peter said, by human hands. Now, why this word? Why include this specific word about the life of Jesus, that he was rejected? That's actually the aspect of resilience that I want to talk about today, is the word rejection. All of us know what it feels like, and maybe that's why it was included when people talked about the coming of Jesus, when Jesus himself talked about his life, and when people even looked back on his life, people often referred to the rejection that Jesus was going to experience. Why? Maybe because God has something he wants to show us. Maybe because God has something he wants to teach us about that deep emotional feeling called rejection. Last week, I gave you a simple definition for resilience. Said that resilience is bouncing back from disruption. It's bouncing back from disruption. What disruption? I asked you last week just to throw out some. Obviously, there's really heavy ones, but there's little disruptions that happen all the time. Some of you mentioned traffic. Some of you mentioned the pollen. Some of you mentioned showing up late to something or getting news about something. Any kind of disruption that happens in our life is an opportunity to build resilience. And as we said last week, when you win in the small ones, you actually build that muscle up to be able to handle some of the larger ones. Being resilient is all about the ability to bounce back, to roll with the punches, to deal with potentially adverse situations in a more positive and creative way. Resilience is like an emotional fitness test. Have you been putting in the work? Because it will eventually show up in the way you are able to or unable to bounce back. You can either succumb to the pressure, you can succumb to the disruption, or you can surmount the disruption. I had a guy in a meeting this week that I was sitting with. He said, yeah, it's one of those times in life where you can either fold up or you can mount up. But how much resilience you've built will determine the way you respond, the way you bounce back. But today I want to talk about that specific kind of disruption, because that's essentially what rejection is. Resilience is also the ability to bounce back from rejection. Rejection is a highly emotional type of disruption, right? And you've experienced it in plenty of ways. Maybe you've been criticized at work for something, or maybe you were criticized in your neighborhood or on a team about something. How you handle criticism without being crushed has everything to do with how much resilience you have. How can we build resilience in the middle of rejection, but also how can we learn to build it for the next time the rejection comes? See, the ability to have resilience in the middle of rejection is a difficult thing, but unfortunately what happens is that rejection, it messes us up so badly, it sometimes keeps us from wanting to try again, right? In fact, without resilience, rejection will wreck us. Have you been wrecked by rejection? Everyone has had some sort of rejection. Maybe it came for you in the way of a job loss. You didn't see it coming. It happened to you. It knocked you off course, and figuring out how to bounce back from it is not easy to do. Maybe you made the presentation. Maybe you did everything like you wanted to do, like you thought you were supposed to do. You asked if you could have the sale, and they said no. Maybe you turned in a proposal, and you thought, okay, I've put a lot of work into this, but you got the word no. Maybe friends had a party, and you weren't invited to the party, and then you saw all about it on Instagram, right? And maybe that came in the form. Maybe that felt like rejection. Maybe you've been through a divorce. Maybe you've been through some kind of breakup. Maybe in your past, you look back as a teenager or even as a kid, and you remember the moment when you didn't make the team, when you didn't get the part, and it felt like rejection. The crazy thing, the difficult thing about rejection is it will paralyze you from trying again, right? That's actually what rejection does. Rejection paralyzes us from moving forward. It convinces us that we are now damaged goods, that we're too broken to be used again. I'm telling you, I don't need to convince you of this, but it's highly emotional, isn't it? It's highly emotional because rejection attaches itself to our soul. It gets all wrapped up inside of who we are. Rejection actually sends us on a mission to go destroy our own self-worth, our own self-esteem. Rejection disturbs and it destabilizes us from that deep sense inside of us that says, I need to belong somewhere. All of us have that inside of us. And when we're rejected, it actually knocks us back, knocks us off course. It causes us to be unsure, do I actually fit? You know, what's interesting to me about the way rejection works is that it's so powerful, it actually can feel like physical pain. Have you had some sense of rejection that felt like a punch in the gut? It actually hurt? I've read that negative social feedback, or the sense that you might just be excluded, or now people are thinking poorly of you, or it has somehow affected your reputation, it actually influences the nervous system, that there is physical effects from it. So it's actually normal that people say things like, yeah, I just can't get my breath. I feel like I'm gasping for air. In some cases, it actually feels like the same thing that physical pain would feel like. I was talking to my wife about this this weekend. She said, hey, what are you preaching on Sunday? And she was asking whether or not she should show up, making that decision that all of us make. I'm just sort of kidding. And I told her I was talking about rejection. And so we, you know, had a conversation about it. I said, have you experienced rejection that you can remember? And without even thinking about it, she told me about this job interview that she had right when she graduated from college. She said, yeah, I was sitting in this job interview and the other person was just asking me questions that I didn't feel like I could answer. And just based on the way this person's body language was, based on the way this person was responding to the interview, she said she could just tell it was not going well and she didn't end up getting called back for the job. And she said it was so hurtful because it felt like rejection. She said, I remember going in, getting in the car and just losing it, just crying, because in that moment, I felt like rejection. And I was telling her about some of the things that I've read about how rejection actually, we can remember it more profoundly than we can remember physical pain. And she said, yeah, I have birthed 5 children. I can't exactly remember the pain. I can remember the pain of that interview. That is amazing. What is it about rejection that is so powerful? Some of you have been through some sort of rejection, and it feels like as if you've been a victim to an attack, and it's difficult to move forward. See, part of the reason why is because rejection, it gets all up in us. It actually plasters itself on the walls of our hearts, at the forefront of our consciousness, and over the rough sketches of our dreams for our future. I mean, it gets all in us. It gets entwined in us. It gets entangled inside of us. And my hope is, I'm believing that it doesn't actually have to be that way. That you don't have to be wrecked by rejection. No, see, the answer of, well, I'm just never going to try again. I'm never going to put myself out there again. I'm never going to go for it again. That doesn't have to be the answer either. But you don't also have to be wrapped up in all the pain and the hurt and the trauma that it's caused. No, there's something more, I really believe, for all of us. A way that we can build resilience, not only so that we can bounce back from the rejection, but so that we can move forward and actually put ourselves out there again. This year has been a really healthy year for me in a number of different ways, but one of the reasons why is because I've been learning about this word that has been, it's been so insightful to me in regard to my own personal health. The word is differentiation. Differentiation, which is the ability to actually not just be so attached to the rejection, that the rejection doesn't, it doesn't define me, it doesn't get itself inside of me. I have the ability to be my own person. Here's the simple definition that a friend of mine has helped me with differentiation, that I can be connected to you, because we should be connected. I can be connected to you, but how you feel and how you think and what you think of me does not determine how I feel, how I think, how I act. This is a powerful concept, that you can actually be your own person. You don't have to be so closely connected to that rejection that it knocks you out, that it wrecks your life. Jesus actually is such a great picture for us of what it looks like to be a differentiated individual. It's so complex to understand Jesus because he's walking on earth and he's fully God, but he's also fully man. And so the pain that we went through, the problems that we went through, middle school, breakups, being betrayed by family and friends, experiencing rejection are all things that he experienced as well. And I want to take you back to a moment at the very, not the very beginning of Jesus' life, but the very beginning of Jesus' ministry, where we see maybe what allowed him to be a differentiated person. The moment in his life where he seemed called to be not what was coming, not the person that was going to be rejected, not the rejection itself, but where he was given his own identity by his Father. At the very beginning of Jesus' life, we've got a lot of gospel accounts, Matthew, Mark, John, and Luke as well, that account the birth of Jesus, but then they skip over 30 years. You know, it's almost like he just disappears. I mean, what we know about him is we know that he worked with his father, Joseph, that he worked with him as a carpenter, which helped me understand the bumper sticker of this friend of mine that used to take me to school. He had this bumper sticker on the back of his red blazer that said, my boss is a Jewish carpenter. Took me a while to really understand the joke of that, but now that I get it, it's actually pretty funny. Jesus worked as a carpenter until he was about 30, and then he steps on the scene and he starts doing things. And then over the next 3 years of his life, that's where we really see so much of what we see about his life. But before he did any of the miracles or any of the healings or even preached any of the sermons, there was this moment where God seemed to clearly give him his identity. There was a man named John, not John that wrote the gospel account John, but John the Baptist, or John the Baptizer as it could be translated. He was down by the river baptizing loads of people, and Jesus showed up one day to be baptized. John actually looked at Jesus and he said, I can't do this. I can't baptize you. You should be baptizing me. He said, I'm not even fit to tie your sandals. Jesus says, no, John, this would mean a lot to me. I have something that I want to show. I want to symbolize what baptism really is, this out with the old, in with the new. I want to show people that I'm doing what I'm asking them to do as well. But there's something that happens not during the baptism, but immediately after the baptism that has always been fascinating to me. I want to just show it to you because I think there's something in it for us on how we can get ready for the rejection that is coming, how we can bounce back from the rejection that we're all going to experience. This is in Matthew's account in chapter 3, verse 16. Matthew wrote, as soon as Jesus was baptized, he went up out of the water. At that moment, heaven was opened, which is hard to even fathom what that means. Whatever that was, that sounded maybe, maybe they were cueing a sound effect. We didn't plan on that, but that worked out really well. At that moment, heaven was opened, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him. So you get the picture of this, that he comes up out of the water, and Matthew's writing about it. He's going, I don't even know how to say what happened, but it was as if heaven split open. And there was this light on him, and the Spirit of God was present like a dove. And then this voice from heaven, Matthew writes, said this, and a voice from heaven said, this is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. This is my son, whom I love, and in him I'm well pleased. I just assume that the voice sounded like Morgan Freeman. I mean, that's all we have to go on, really, you know? Now, there's so much packed into this. But Matthew's trying to take this down, trying to write it. He said, it's as if a voice from heaven said, this is my son, whom I love and am well pleased. What was happening here? It's as if God were declaring on Jesus' life, establishing for him his identity. I would imagine that it's not that Jesus didn't know, but maybe he was making it clear to everyone else that this is my son, whom I love and am well pleased. What's so interesting to me is that this is before he had done anything. There were no miracles that had happened yet. There were no healings that had happened yet. He hadn't fed the 5,000. He hadn't walked on water. He hadn't healed any sick. He hadn't provided for anyone yet. He hadn't preached any of his amazing sermons. And God's letting everyone know, hey, before he does any of that, I want you all to know that this is my son in whom I'm well pleased, who I love. See, identity, to understand ourselves, identity is best when it is ascribed to us, right? There comes a time when what you think about yourself is not accurate. Sometimes I think I'm something I'm not, and sometimes I miss out on thinking what I actually am. Sometimes just letting other people ascribe identity to me is not helpful either, but there are times in life when you can't just look from within and you can't just look around. You have to look up to hear what the Father wants to say about you. This is my son, whom I love and am well pleased. In John 1, John was writing about what it was like for Jesus to come on the scene. And he wrote in John 1, verse 12, he said that to all who believe in him, he gave them the right to become kids or children of God. He's saying, hey, one of the benefits of Jesus' death and his resurrection is that you now have a pathway to become a child of God. Maybe God was stamping Jesus' identity on him so that we could know a little bit more about who we are. And I would just imagine that This is the thing that fueled Jesus in those moments of rejection when everyone else said, let me tell you who you're not. Let me tell you what I think about you. That in those moments, he had to hold on to the one thing that he knew to be true about him, that my Father has declared over me that I am his, that I am loved, and he's well pleased of me. Sometimes that's all you have to hold on to, right? About a year ago, I kind of thought, you know, this identity thing, I kind of thought it was something that you learn when you're a teenager, and then you get over it, and then you just become an adult, right? But that's not the way it works. The journey of us reminding ourselves who God thinks of us and who God says we actually are, it's a never-ending process. About a year ago, I had all this stuff start bubbling up at work where I was feeling like I was failing. And I'm not saying this for you to pander and say, no, you're doing a great job. No, that's not really helpful. That's not really what I need. What I needed in the moment, I felt like, is I thought, you know what? I need to just clear this up. I need to have a conversation with my boss about this. His name is Lane. He's a terrific boss. And so I asked him, I said, we had this meeting on Tuesday that had kind of gotten weird. And I just was feeling these things. And I said, I'm going to go clear this up because I don't like this feeling of being a failure or this feeling of rejection or whatever it was that was happening inside of me. And so I say, hey, could we come on Thursday? Our weekend starts on Thursday evening. We weekend on Friday and Saturday. And so I say, hey, before the weekend comes, could we have a conversation about this? Because I don't think I use this word with him, but what I was feeling kind of turnt. You know what I mean? Like on the inside, when you're like, something's cranked in there, you know? And so I thought, okay, well, I'm going to sit down. And my problem is I'm an extrovert. And so any thought I have feels like something legitimate that should come out of my mouth. And so, which is not, you would think I had matured past that. I have not. And so we start having this discussion about this, about the way I was feeling and about what I was seeing, what I was experiencing. And it turned into somewhat of a robust discussion. You've probably had those kinds of discussions with your boss as well. And in the middle of this discussion, I started feeling something that I had never felt in a meeting before. I started feeling emotion start to rise up. Have you ever had that? You know, maybe you were sitting in a counselor's office. Maybe you were sitting in a conversation with a friend. Maybe it was a situation at work. I don't know. I had never cried at work before. I mean, I'd cried over good stuff, you know, amazing stuff, or even hearing some really difficult news, sad news about someone. But I'd never been sitting there having a conversation with someone, felt emotion. And so I felt this emotion come up. And then I did what most of you have done before too, where you start pushing it down. You're like, no, not now. You know, this is not the time for that. But then you know how you have those moments where the emotion's like, oh yeah, it is. We're coming out. And so I'm sitting there with my boss and I start crying. And I don't really know what's going on. I don't know. I mean, what we were talking about, I'm like, this doesn't even add up. We're talking about like some job situations and some spreadsheets and some stuff we're trying to figure out and some budgets and stuff. And I'm like, it's all non-emotional stuff, yet I got these tears coming out. And then I got to the point where it was one of those awkward things where you've sat with people where they start crying and you don't know what to do, you know? And that was, I knew he was feeling that. So it's like, do I hand you a tissue? Do I give you a hug, pat on the back? Do I say something funny to try to break it up? Or do I just sit there silently, you know, judging you? Like, why are you such a mess? And so he didn't know what to do. And I was feeling that from him. And so I was like, you know what? Let's just table this. Let's talk about this. And he asked me in the moment, he goes, are you okay? And my response was, yeah, I'm fine. Well, clearly I'm not fine. I'm crying over this, you know? There's something going on. Yeah, of course. I mean, I didn't know what to say. I'm like, so I finally said, hey, we got to just figure this out. Can we table this for next week? And so he goes, yeah, that's fine. And then I had probably one of the most hilariously embarrassing moments of my life. My boss, who is a pastor, asked me, who is a pastor, if he could pray for me. And I said, no. That's called rock bottom. You know what I mean? And so I said, no, I gotta go. And so I just got up and I just left and went and got in my car and drove home. So I'm driving home and, you know, then it's just more. In that moment, I'm praying. I'm like, God, what is going on? Like, I don't know what this is, but there's something inside of me that feels like it's broken or hurting or disrupted or bothered. And I started thinking about the idea of rejection. I feel like I feel like I'm being perceived in a couple of these meetings as maybe things aren't going well, or I'm not living up to a certain standard, or I'm failing, or I'm feeling rejected. And I don't hear an audible voice from God. I never have. But I remember in that moment thinking, okay, well, what does God think about me? And I'm not going to sit there and tell you that I thought about this line, but essentially I thought about this line. I thought, God, what do you think of it? You think, well, you're my son and I love you and I'm well pleased in you. And then I started crying more, you know, because that doesn't help at all, you know. But the truth is, when you feel that in life, you can go, well, I'm just never going to try again. That's not a great option. Or you can lie to yourself and make yourself think, well, cheer up, big guy, you're a winner. Well, there's going to be times in life where you're not. I mean, every great person in the world that has tried something has failed, right? I think it was Churchill that said, you know what success in life is? Just moving from failure to failure. That's what success really is. And so the idea that you're just going to lie to yourself or that you're never going to try again, neither one of those are good. The only idea that makes sense to me is to go, I am your son and you love me and you are pleased in me. And that is enough. That's what defines me. And being differentiated means I'm not who you say I am. I'm not who the rejection says I am. I am my own person. And the only one that is able to, the only one that is powerful enough, the only one that is good enough and strong enough and wise enough to define who I am is my Father in heaven. It's a real small box of people that get to tell me who I am. And you get a right. You get a right to tell me who I am. That's what it means to be differentiated. And that's what I think it means to start learning how to develop resilience in the face of rejection. Not just to make it through the rejection, but to get to the next one and go, you know what? I'm his child and he loves me and he's pleased with me. So what wouldn't I try? Why wouldn't I try again? Why wouldn't I put myself out there again? Because what could you do to me? I'm not saying I don't care. We're connected. I don't want to have this cavalier attitude like, yeah, I don't care. No, it's not that. I'm just saying you can't hurt me because he's already told me who I am. See, that I think it's the best way to live. In fact, if you have never heard that before, I encourage you to give it a shot. I encourage you to figure out in your own life, what would it look like for me to not be defined by it, but to let him define who I am instead? I want to give you just a couple of real practical things that I think every one of us could do to go apply this. Because it doesn't mean that we just ignore the rejection and just act like it's not there. That's not what I'm proposing. Let me give you just a couple of little ideas. Number one, would you choose to be honest about how the rejection feels? You got to be honest about how it feels, right? I mean, you can't cover it up and act like, oh, what? I don't care. It didn't hurt. I'm fine. No. You got to be. I'm not telling you you need to go get on Dr. Phil or something, but I'm telling you, you need to be honest with someone about, hey, that hurt. That felt bad. I'm grieving. I'm sad. I'm frustrated. I'm upset because I don't feel like that was right, or because I don't like the way that went, or because I'm worried about what that says about me. You have to be able to say, this is how it actually feels. And then, would you be willing to offer yourself some kindness? I don't know why this is hard to do, but this is hard to do sometimes because we end up blaming ourselves. Oh, well, it was my fault. When if somebody else came to you and gave you their situation, you would show them some compassion. You would treat the other person like it's someone you're responsible to help. So what if you treated yourself like you're someone that you're responsible to help? Maybe you'd show yourself a little grace, a little kindness, a little mercy, a little compassion. What if you just tried it? And then would you be willing to learn from the rejection? There is something to learn from it, right? I mean, you can't just grow numb to it. And you can't completely disregard it because it will turn into even more of a regret if you don't learn from it. No, but respond to it by learning. Hey, what is in this to learn? If you've been through a divorce recently, you should ask the question, what's in it for me to learn? If you've lost a job recently, You should ask the question, hey, what's in this for me to learn? If you tried out for something and you didn't get it, you should be willing to go, hey, I want to learn from this. Help me learn from this, because there's something in it that can help grow me. And ultimately, it will help grow your resilience. But then lastly, you got to refuse to let the rejection define you. You got to refuse to let the rejection tell you who you are. You tried out for something, you didn't make it. That's not who you are. That's just what happened. You had a relationship that you had both committed to and it didn't work out. That's not who you are. That's just what happened. You lost a job. That's not who you are. See, resilience is the ability to redirect your response to the rejection. It's your ability to redirect how you feel about it and what you're going to do about it. That I'm not going to just disregard it, I'm going to learn from it. I'm not just going to ignore it, but I'm going to pay attention to it. But I'm not going to let it do to me what it wants to do to me. Rejection wants to wreck you. But through resilience, God helps us establish this internal strength to go, you know what? I can get back on the horse again. I can put myself out there again, because that's just what happened. That's not who I am. That's just the situation that occurred. But that's not my identity. No, he tells me who I am. I left out the second little part of what Peter actually said about Jesus, because I wanted to come back to it at the end. In 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 4, he said, hey, so as you come to him being the living stone, who was rejected by humans, but chosen by God and precious to him. I love that Peter somehow had gone through all this betrayal where if anyone was going to incriminate themselves, it was Peter, because of what he had done actually by denying that he even knew Jesus. But Peter got to the point where he knew enough about Jesus to know, yes, you were rejected by human hands, but you were chosen by God and you are precious to him. And if that's who you are, maybe that's who I am too. If they rejected you, then maybe I'm going to go through rejection as well. And if God defined you, then maybe God could define me as well. I think learning to build resilience through rejection, it means real simply, this is the last statement that I want us to just sit with for a few minutes, is it's refusing to let others' rejection of you eclipse what God's acceptance says of you. It's refusing to let the rejection eclipse, be bigger than, outweigh what God, what his acceptance of you has said about you. I'm telling you, for every single one of us, I know I don't know your whole story, but for every single one of us, there is a more resilient version of you. And the more resilient version of you will be able to handle rejection from anyone, at any time, anywhere. Not because you don't care, but because you already know who you are. Yeah, I might be rejected by humans, but I am accepted by God. That in that situation, yeah, they might, if I put myself out there, they might reject me, but that's not who I am anyway. And I'm telling you, this culture that we live in right now, our culture loves to tie us up into knots. You're not this, and you're not that, and you'll never do this, and you'll never do that. And I just want to invite you into a deeper relationship with a perfect Father who says, would you let me untie those knots? Would you let me walk you into a life that's described by freedom? Not freedom because you don't care, but freedom because you're already mine. Nobody can tell you what you're not. No rejection can tell you what you're not, because you're mine. I really think it's not only the only way to build resilience, but I think it's the greatest way to live.